to the Press Start Podcast.
Your number one source for all kinds of gaming content.
On Duck Island Radio.
You're listening to the Press Start Podcast on Duck Island Radio. I'm Daniel Marnie.
And I'm Abigail Blake, and we're here for the next 30 minutes to get you up to speed with some top-notch gaming content.
Coming up in the next half hour, we'll have an interview with George Griffiths, a games development student.
I'll be looking into the rise of app gaming.
And I'll be finding out just how we buy our games and what this means for high street shops.
But first,
they're fun, interactive and highly entertaining. At least that's what all of us think about gaming. Whether you've been playing games for years or have just started yesterday, the Press Start Podcast is here to get stuck in with our favourite obsession. Here is Sam to bring you an introduction to all things gaming.
Games and gaming, possibly the most universally enjoyed and popular pastimes around the world. According to gaming research firm Newzoo, Americans spent roughly £12 billion on video games in 2013. But what makes games so appealing, and why do so many people spend so much money on this virtual reality?
I caught up with games programming student Daniel Draper to find out more.
Gaming's appealing because you can do stuff that you can't normally do in the real world. You can, well, it's fun, you don't have to follow the normal conventions. Like people say, you know, GTA, oh, you go around killing people. That's because it's acceptable in the game.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it. It doesn't mean you're going to go out and do it in the real world.
During the interview, I also asked Dan if he preferred console or PC gaming.
Depends. Everything but FPS, PC. Because you get a lot better graphics, got a lot more power, do a lot more stuff. Like strategy, you can get a lot more things, and it's a better control system for it. Yeah. I'm terrible at FPS on PC, so I prefer the... That's where I started, it's like what I'm better at.
For many people such as Dan, gaming is not only a hobby, but can also turn into a career and life path. With the modern rise of consoles, PCs and mobile app gaming, there is a much greater market for those who wish to create, design and develop games.
One man who supports and encourages this idea is John Shearer, a senior lecturer in games computing here at the University of Lincoln. We asked him what kind of careers are there in gaming.
There's three aspects. There's sort of the technical side, programming, debugging, software testing. There's sort of the design side, which tends to be a much smaller group, so actually sort of designing the actual game. And the other side would then be developing the 3D models and the sound and the music that goes with it.
John also had his say on why gaming has become such a global phenomenon.
I think it always was. It's just now video games. But I think fundamentally people quite like playing and doing activities together, and pre-video games, you just play different games with each other.
So far, gaming seems to be a very popular, positive interest. But there are many out there who are actually against it. For example, it could be argued that allowing younger children to experience violent gameplay will make them more likely to commit this behaviour themselves. Games such as Call of Duty, which rewards a player for killing an opponent, can send out the wrong message to adolescents who could believe they get the same rewards in reality.
However, Ben Woodhouse, president of the University of Lincoln's Gaming Society, had an opposing view.
To allow a child to play a violent game is akin to allowing a child to watch an 18-rated movie. So it's up to the parent, in my opinion. If the parent hasn't had the responsibility to study what they're buying their child, and if it is marketed 18, and then they have the nerve to kind of complain about it, it's like that's your responsibility, it's not the child's fault.
We also asked Ben how he first got into gaming.
Through high school I was bullied quite a bit, so it kind of was that place that just took away from all the stress and all the negativity I had going through high school, just somewhere I could escape to.
So, we've heard several opinions on games and gaming, but we also want to know what you think. How did you first get into gaming? Why do you find it so appealing? And crucially, what's best, console or PC gaming?
Sam Jenkins talking with Ben Woodhouse. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on this topic, so please check out our website for more information on how to get in touch. The address is www.pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk. A lot of dots in there.
The Press Start Podcast is on Twitter. Follow us at Press Start Poddy.
One area of the games design industry that we haven't mentioned yet is possibly the most common way that games are consumed in this day and age. In fact, I can bet that you've probably got one of the world's leading devices for gaming in your pocket right now. Any guesses? Here's Abigail to tell us more. Some of these figures may surprise you.
Over the last decade, mobile phones have become a part of our global culture, so much so that it's been reported that there are almost as many mobile phones in use at this very second as there are people on the planet. Since the invention of the first ever mobile phone in 1973, it was only a matter of time before mobile phones became more than just a means of communication, but also a way of taking photos, social networking, and gaming. Starting from the year of the first ever game for mobile was released, allow Charlie to give you a brief history of mobile gaming.
In the early 1990s, the mobile gaming era began with Snake, the addictive game where you can direct a pixelated snake around a tiny maze. In 1997, Nokia became the first mobile company to pre-install a game into their models. Since then, an estimated 350 million mobile phones have offered Snake as a standard feature. As the years went on, other mobile phone developers started to cut onto Snake's popularity and went on to develop their own games for their own devices. Having a games menu on a mobile phone was becoming the norm, and people started spending more time on their mobile phones as a result. In 2007, the release of Apple's iPhone with its impressive computing power and stunning graphics really turned mobile gaming into what it is today. With the launch of the App Store the following year in 2008, around 150,000 games are now available for us to download at the touch of a button. Since its release, 500 million iPhones have been sold worldwide, and with each one having access to said App Store, it's no wonder gaming on our mobile phones has become a characteristic of our everyday lives.
Hearing that, it's not surprising that people can become utterly obsessed with some of these apps. For instance, you've probably heard of it, Angry Birds. There's a whole Angry Birds land at Thorpe Park in Surrey, loads of merchandise, and even a film is in production. With 150,000 to choose from, Charlie and I went out to see what the people of Lincoln think is the best gaming app.
So what's your favourite gaming app?
I'd play New Star Soccer and Dream League Soccer.
Why is that?
Starting to play on the toilet.
Or the train.
Normally, yeah.
What's your favourite gaming app to play?
Temple Run.
Temple Run, good choice. What about
and,
you?
Doodle Jump.
Yeah. Do you find you're addicted to these apps?
Once I start playing, I get addicted because every time I lose, I want to play again.
Okay, that's a good answer.
I kind of notice when I get addicted to a game and then I stop.
If I have to pick an app on my phone, it would probably be Chrono Trigger.
What kind of games do you like to play?
Really silly games.
Everything that looks like that jelly splash or whatever.
Oh, Candy Crush.
Yeah. Oh, I've given up on that.
But
really
there's loads of different ones that are alike. And that's
Fruit Bump, Unlimited Lives. I think everybody plays.
To get a professional perspective, I met with Jonah Wimbush, a third-year interactive design student at the University of Lincoln who has a strong interest in app development.
So why is app designing something you'd like to get into? Why is that an area of the industry you're interested in?
I think at the minute, sort of, smartphones are a huge thing and they've made leaps and bounds, and there's so much potential there for like fun little interactions and bits of play that you sort of miss out on when you're hitting buttons. With the touchscreen, it sort of opens up this whole new world of how you can interact with scenes or characters.
From your point of view, as you're doing interactive design, where do you think the gaming industry will take it next?
We'd probably guess that it'd head towards PC gaming more now. There'll be a sort of resurgence of little indie teams and stuff, like really just trying to build good products. There will be a place for gaming on a sort of mobile or tablet form.
So there you have it, gaming on your mobile phone. Tell us what your favourite app is and your thoughts on our stats by liking the Facebook page.
Thanks Abigail and Charlie for opening our eyes to the popularity of gaming with a mobile phone. I don't know about you, but some of those statistics were rather shocking. I didn't realise quite how much mobile phones are taking over, even in the gaming world.
The Press Start Podcast.
The Golden Joystick Awards were held last month, and From Software's action RPG Dark Souls picked up the Game of the Year, voted for by members of the gaming public. Ubisoft Montreal received the Studio of the Year Award, and Hideo Kojima was given a lifetime achievement for his contributions to the industry with the Metal Gear Solid series. Personally, I'm very much looking forward to the next installment. Phantom Pain looks absolutely fantastic. In more indie gaming-related news, following the success of Binding of Isaac Rebirth, designer Edmund McMillan has announced plans for the development of an expansion that would reportedly double the amount of content in the form of a new game mode, along with new enemies, bosses, areas, and more. He will also be looking to the games community for item ideas, and will be putting the best 10 into the game. If you've got an idea and you think it would fit into the game, you can go to bindingofisaac.com for details on how to do so. Also, if you have any opinions on this or on any of these news-related topics, you can always go to our blog and leave a comment, or you can tweet us at PressStartPoddy, P-O-D-D-Y, Poddy. My name's Daniel Marnie, and that was a quick bite of news and new game releases.
Your number one source for gaming content.
Want to give us an opinion in more than 140 characters? Search for the Press Start podcast on Facebook or leave a comment on our blog at www.pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk.
With the announcement that From Software's Dark Souls 2 is getting a re-release on next-generation consoles, we thought it would be a good idea to review the title and inspect its re-release coming in April 2015. Dark Souls 2 is an unforgiving third-person action roleplay game developed by From Software and originally released on March 11th, 2014. Your player character is an undead adventurer who has travelled to the land of Dranglake in an attempt to rid themselves of their curse. Doing so will require them to fight their way through hordes of creatures, defeat bosses to attain experience and level themselves and their weapons up, and also die, over and over and over. This is a game that makes you earn your accomplishments. The Souls series has always been immensely challenging, and Dark Souls 2 is no exception. Any creature in the land of Dranglake is capable of harshly punishing new and overeager players, and bosses three or four times your size will swat you into oblivion without a second thought. It is only through patience and perseverance that you will overcome the obstacles that stand in your way. A wild array of playstyles are available to you from the get-go, allowing you to invest into heavy great swords, spears, katanas and other weapons, or attune your body to learn spells, hexes and miracles, letting you bombard your enemies from afar. I won't spoil the rest. But the game does have a few issues, the most glaring of which being its independence on using cheap tactics to beat the player character and murdering them in unavoidable ways. This can make the game somewhat frustrating, but overall, Dark Souls 2 is a must-play for those who miss the hardcore nature of games from the early 90s, or really anyone who likes a challenging, player-driven game with deep, rich, and satisfying combat. The re-release will include all post-launch DLC and will of course feature a graphical upgrade. If you haven't yet played Dark Souls 2, I highly recommend it, and the re-release, Scholar of the First Sin, looks to be the version to play.
You're listening to Duck Island Radio.
Now, what is digital media and what does it offer that physical media cannot? Daniel wanted to find out more about this new way to purchase games, so went out and about in Lincoln to discover what the general consensus of digital gaming is.
Over the past few years, gaming has seen a huge boost in popularity, and it has undeniably become far less of a stigma to be a gamer nowadays. As a result of this, PC gaming in particular has evolved, and platforms like Valve Corporation's Steam and Electronic Arts' Origin now exist, that deliver purely digital content. Create an account, input your card details, and then buy, download, and play games all without leaving your home. This method of purchase has since made its way to the next generation of games consoles, and has already caused some controversy over pricing concerns. I wanted to see just how popular this new method has become, and so asked some of Lincoln's public what they preferred.
How do you typically buy your games? So obviously you just came out of a game. Do you still go for physical stuff, or are you open to digital media?
It really depends. I only tend to get the physical copy if I want a special edition or something.
Ah, okay.
It really depends on how much I care about the game.
Well, I play PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4.
Oh, okay.
So I usually go into the shop and buy them myself instead of doing it online.
Yeah. Any reasons for favouring physical over digital? Is it purely because it's ease of access, or do you like possessing the physical thing?
Yeah, I prefer possessing the physical thing, and usually what I notice is when you buy it online as well, you can't trade it back.
So how do purely physical media-based retailers feel about the rise of cheap, instantly accessible digital media, and what measures have they taken to adapt to the market? I spoke to Josh at Gotham Games, an independent shop in Lincoln that specialises in older, more retro games. With the rise in the popularity of digital media over the past few years, how do you believe this has affected you here at Gotham Games?
I think we're kind of lucky in the way that we specialise mostly in retro. I think that really hasn't affected us. There's always been emulation, and that's always been a digital thing. That's been around a pretty long time.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, even though they do emulation, there's still the collective aspect.
Have you found that you've had to adapt to that trend at all, or do you think you're still quite in a comfortable place where you are?
Yeah, I think where others have struggled, so for example, if you look at game and Gametronics, which is like the new big one focusing a lot more on the digital side and the electronic side, they've had to kind of sell digital products in store, which is kind of a difficult thing to do that they've been introducing recently. That's not something we've ever had to do, which I'm kind of glad about, because it's just we want to keep it simple. We want to keep games as games, basically.
Yeah. At Gotham Games currently, do you think you have any plans or any possibilities of stocking these digital titles, or do you think you're still rock solid into the physical media?
I think it's not something we've ever really considered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the nearest thing that we can say is that we use online as an outlet for our games. So we use Facebook and Twitter and all these things. But I don't think we could ever have digital, certainly not in the near future. It may be a possibility at some point.
Yeah.
But we focus heavily on second hand, and that's something that's hard to do with the digital market.
So it looks like discs and plastic boxes are still king, at least concerning video games, and assuming shops like Gotham Games stick around, I'm willing to bet that they'll still be popular with enthusiasts and collectors, even if their mainstream popularity does die down.
Daniel speaking with Josh Galvin from Gotham Games there. If you'd like to hear the full interview, head on over to our blog at pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk. And if you have an opinion on which type of media you prefer, why not tweet it to us at pressstartpoddy on Twitter, or visit our Facebook page by searching for the Press Start Podcast. The Press Start Podcast.
In gaming news, Assassin's Creed Unity received the third post-launch patch on the 26th of November that included over 300 bug fixes. The game launched on November the 11th and was plagued with graphical glitches and bugs. These post-launch fixes are welcome and necessary, but really, it does beg the question, why weren't these fixed before the game shipped? The developer, Ubisoft, has since come under fire for this because it's review embargoes have been particularly strict, and that's meant that reviewers haven't been able to get their hands on copies of the game early, and so reviews are published several days after it's been released. This normally indicates that the publisher doesn't trust that the game will review very well. In other news, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U launched in America on the 21st of November, and has already sold 490,000 copies across both physical and digital platforms, making it the fastest selling Wii U title in the US, and dethroning Mario Kart 8 to do so. My name's Daniel Marnie, and that was a quick bite of news and new game releases.
Your number one source for gaming content.
The Press Start Podcast.
From new game releases to the complete opposite now, as we test your knowledge of old games, or more specifically, their music. Sam has put together a game of Guess the Soundtrack, and we'd like to see how well you can do. Visit our blog at pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk and take the quiz for yourself. In the meantime, though, here's how the population of Lincoln performed.
Yes, it's Sam Jenkins here on the High Street of Lincoln, on what must be described as a miserable, cloudy day. However, this hasn't stopped the shoppers of Lincoln, so let's see how well they know their game soundtracks. Here's track one.
No, I really do recognise it. It's got like that, it definitely sounds like Crash Bandicoot or something like that. Like 90s, Spyro, Crash Bandicoot. Even sounds like Temple Run would sound, I don't know. I'm going to go with a Crash Bandicoot game. I don't know.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know. I recognise it, but I'm stuck between two things. I don't know. Either Crash Bandicoot or Spyro. I don't know. I'll go for Spyro.
It sounds a bit like Crash Bandicoot, I think. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm going for Crash Bandy.
Here's track two.
Banger. Remember this? Sonic the Hedgehog, definitely. It's gotta be. Know my stuff.
Well, this is very 90s, isn't it? I can't think what it is. I know it, but I just have no idea. Is it Sonic?
don't know, it sounds Sonic.
Track 3 up next.
They're all very Nintendo. Oh, I can't. Oh, I know this one as well. I can't figure what it is.
This one. Come on. This is a big boy tune. What a song. Childhood song. Crash Bandicoot. I could play this for hours.
This is track number 4.
Pokemon easy, yeah. Got that in my room. Play it all the time.
Well, these are bangers so far. This is Pokemon. Pokemon Red or Blue? Too good.
I have no idea.
And finally, the 5th track.
Oh, this one's easy. This is like the sound of my childhood. It's Mario.
Yeah, it's Super Mario Bros. Easy, easy.
Alright. But it's got to be Mario, but which one? Super Mario Bros?
This has been Guess the Soundtrack. Back to you in the studio.
Sam Jenkins on the High Street of Lincoln. If you wish to get involved and give it a go yourself, check out our blog at pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk and take the quiz. We'll find out later on in the podcast how well you did. The Press Start Podcast.
In terms of game releases, we have The Crew coming out on the 2nd of December. This is an action driving game from Ubisoft with a massive open world stretching across the entire United States of America. The game is designed around social play. Wherever you drive, you'll run into other people who are playing at the same time, and you can then team up with them to complete challenges, or they may work against you. Super Smash Bros. For Wii U is being released on November the 28th. This is a spectacle fighting game where iconic Nintendo game characters fight. It's full of the customary Nintendo charm, along with a whole host of secret characters to unlock, items to use in battle, and the introduction of 8-player local multiplayer. If you own or plan to own a Wii U, this is definitely one to put on the Christmas list. I know I'm going to be getting that. Tales from the Borderlands has been released on the 25th of November. This is set in the same universe as that of Borderlands 1 and 2, but with a lot more story and a lot less guns. Written and produced by Telltale Games, who rose to prominence with the success of the Walking Dead video game and more recently The Wolf Among Us, Tales from the Borderlands is an episodic, interactive, story-based game where the choices you make impact and influence the overall outcome. The first episode is available now, and future episodes will be available in the coming months. Grand Theft Auto 5 for PS4 and Xbox One released on the 18th of November. Redecorating and re-releasing any game barely a year after its initial release can leave first-time players feeling downheartened and shortchanged. But Rockstar has pulled out all of the stops with the release of GTA 5 for next-gen consoles, as well as the PC release, which is coming early next year. The greatest new addition, in my opinion, has to be a first-person mode that can be toggled anywhere. Fancy seeing the inside of the helicopter you're flying in? Or prefer first-person gunplay to third-person? Rockstar's got you covered. All in all, the inclusion of this new mode meant recreating almost all of the original animations from scratch. Animation director Rob Nelson has said that they created 3,000 animations just for weapons. Along with a graphical upgrade to take advantage of the power of the next-gen systems, this looks to be the definitive version of GTA 5. You're listening to the Press Start Podcast on Duck Island Radio. If you'd like to tweet us, we are at Press Start Poddy. That's Poddy, P-O-D-D-Y. You can search for us on Facebook, the Press Start Podcast, and you can also go to our blog and check out some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. We'll be putting some of the full-length interviews up there and a ton of other behind-the-scenes info and posts from our team. Our blog is www.pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk.
Your number one source for gaming content. We've had great interest in the game, actually, with many of you logging on to challenge yourselves. In fact, James McLaren messaged us on Facebook to tell us how much fun he had after hitting the top score. Thank you for tweeting in Sophie Baines, who said, "Wow, just hit the high score! Hashtag ProGamer, hashtag PressStartPodcast. Remember to keep tweeting us."
The Press Start Podcast.
Today we have George in the studio and we are going to be talking about the differences between PC and console and also how these games are distributed. George is a first year games computing student at the University of Lincoln. Hello, George.
Hello.
With the ongoing debates between PC and console gamers about which platform is better, which side do you tend to agree with?
I usually agree with PC gaming because that's what I use.
Why is this platform better than console, do you think?
It's not really better, but there are like pros and cons of each. Like, it costs more for a PC, but then you can also like mod games, so you get a longer life out of them and stuff like that. The best thing to do if you can't really afford like a good gaming PC would be to buy a console, because if you buy that, then it will last for like a solid 6 years at least, and then like then you'll just need to buy another console. Whereas with a gaming PC, after about like 3 years, you'll probably need to pay like another £300 to upgrade it, so you can keep on using it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So with PC, the upgrades in software or such take a lot longer than upgrades in consoles.
Yeah.
Do you play any console games at all?
No, but I did used to before. Like, I saved up the money to get a PC.
What did you play on?
Xbox 360.
Xbox 360. When you are buying games on PC, do you buy them digitally or physically?
Depends which one's cheaper.
Okay, what's usually the case?
Usually it's digitally.
Usually digitally. Is that on Steam?
Yeah.
Okay. What about on console? So when you did play on Xbox, do you buy digital or physical?
Physical, because that was usually cheaper.
Usually cheaper. Do you think that one day consoles will go completely digital?
Yeah, but not for a good couple of years now, because like, the Xbox One tried to do that, but then the public really didn't like that, because there are places that still can't really have internet, like a solid internet connection all the time. So when like the internet is sustained in more areas, then I think they'll try with that again.
Okay. One of the main problems with digital distribution, which has become very apparent through the likes of Steam, is the fact that anyone can just upload a game and sell it. This can leave the marketplace full of terrible and often broken games. How do you think that Valve, the company that owns Steam, could prevent this sort of thing from happening?
Well, they sort of have a thing. They have the Steam Greenlight, which basically, like, the people vote for what games they want, and then Valve will look at those games, and if they think it's worth it, they will publish it on Steam. There's like other distributors that just let you upload and publish it, but with Steam you need to go through like a voting process, and it still leaves broken games coming out, but it reduces it slightly, sort of thing. So.
Okay, that makes sense. Have you ever bought a dodgy game on the likes of Steam or anything like that?
Not yet. I usually wait a few days before I get buying anything to see whether it's broken.
Okay, so do you read like online reviews and things like that before you buy a game? Yeah. Thank you, George, for talking to us today.
You're welcome. The Press Start Podcast.
The newest Pokemon release is the remake of Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, named Pokemon Omega Ruby Version and Alpha Sapphire. The game follows the same story as the original, however there is also an additional story added onto the original plot, as well as new characters. It seems Nintendo are switching up gameplay by adding a new depth of character interaction and immersion by showing the avatar with a third-person perspective. The gameplay is similar to that of Pokemon X and Y, however they have added some other additional features, such as making it so that you can actually fly around the sky on top of a Pokemon and freely choose where you want to go. Also, instead of walking around fighting normal Pokemon or trainer Pokemon, you can go into a contest as it is. Overall, it was a good remake of the original game, and any fans of the original should try it out, if not for the gameplay itself, at least for the nostalgia factor. The Press Start Podcast is on Twitter. Follow us at Press Start Poddy.
You're listening to the Press Start Podcast on Duck Island Radio.
And that brings us to the end of our first episode of the Press Start Podcast. If you like our show or have some feedback you'd like to share with us, why not let us know about it on our Twitter at Press Start Poddy. Or you could search for us on Facebook by searching for the Press Start Podcast.
We also have our blog, where we post behind-the-scenes content along with extended versions of interviews. You can find that at www.pressstartpodcast.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk. I'm Daniel Marnie.
I'm Abigail Blake.
And until next time, play some games.
You're listening to Duck Island Radio.